Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
I am your special guest, Jake.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from cool kobolds to chitinous critters. And today, we're talking about the Kalish Tar.
Prepare yourselves.
I cast Fireball.
Hey, Jake.
What's up, Will?
Thanks for joining us today.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, y'all.
It's our special guest, Jake Persephone Goldpetal, from our other show, Super Quest Saga. You guys can check that out. Let's talk about the Kalish Tar. What is that?
Let's do it. So today we're heading back to Eberron, and we're covering, I think this is the final Eberron-specific race that we're covering.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we're kind of coming to the end until
Warforged, Shifters, Changelings, Kalish Tar.
Yep, basically. Okay. So, and this, I left this one for last because it was the one I knew the least about. It was the one that's most complicated. So let's get into it. So the Kalish Tar are a race of psionically gifted humanoids specific to Eberron. Though they essentially look basically human, there is more to them than meets the eye. The Kalish Tar are what is called a compound race. They're basically two in one. They are a physical...
They're fucking Transformers.
Yeah, I was going to do it.
They're a physical and spiritual fusion of two species, humans and the spiritual beings known as Quarai. Before we get into like what that means, like their fusion, first I want to talk to you guys about like the origin story of the Kalish Tar and establish like why and how they came to be.
Nice. Let's do that.
Indeed. Excuse me. So... Eberron is a setting very unique from most other settings, with its own specific cosmology that's completely unrelated to the ones that we're more familiar with.
Right, so like, they've got trains.
What I mean is like the upper planes, the lower planes, the gods, etc. It's just all different there. Like none of that stuff really exists in the way that you think it does. Ooh. So I'm not really going to get into that. But for now, we're going to cover is the fact that in the setting of Eberron, there is a separate plane of existence known as Dalkor, which is... also known as the region of dreams. It's a plane that all who sleep visit in their dreams to a certain extent. It's not exactly like that. Basically, when people dream, they kind of ride on the fringe of Dalkor in their own private dreamscape that touches Dalkor. But Dalkor is separate from the dreams. It only touches their dreams. It's its own separate reality.
That's like a plane, like the plane of thought or whatever. They're kinda like on the fringes of this like subconscious reality.
Right. I would say it's very much like that. So the plane itself is a gigantic dreamscape that is highly morphic and can be manipulated by those of strong wills and psionic abilities.
Ooh.
Kind of like Limbo when we talk about like the
Gisterai. Yeah, you can kind of manifest things in Limbo.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool.
Or in the, I believe in the Astral Sea, you can kind of like manipulate stuff too.
Okay.
So it's ringed by uncounted pocket realities, which are essentially the mini dreamscapes where creatures on the prime, where their dreams play out.
Cool.
Now, the dominant species in Dalkor are beings known as the Quarai. They're a race made up of psionic and spiritual energy. They're depicted as phantasmal, Lovecraftian-looking monsters, basically.
They got the Davy Jones.
They got the Davy Jones.
Oh, no.
So they're basically this mixture of claws, tentacles, amorphous bodies, and multiple eyes. They look really horrific.
Oh, God.
It's frightening.
They're mostly human. And then
right now I'm talking about the Quarai.
Oh, okay.
This is the other half. Before,
yeah, the other half. This is where the other half lives.
Oh, jeez.
And guess what? It's hell.
So, again, they're depicted as these phantasmal, Lovecraftian monsters. Claws, tentacles, amorphous bodies, multiple eyes, and they dwell in these magnificent domed cities that they call up from the formless void, and they feed off of the dream energy of mortals.
Mm. Oh, God.
So.
They're bad hypnos.
They're bad hypnos. Bad, bad hypnos. So, one last important fact about Dalkor, the place, is that the entire plane is subject to this eternal cycle of implosion and renewal. So essentially, once every age, the plane is destroyed along with all of its inhabitants before everyone and everything in it is then reborn into new forms.
Okay.
So the last time the cycle occurred was about 40,000 years ago, and it was the beginning of an age called the Age of Darkness. So I'm not sure about the details, but it seems that the core nature of the plane itself at this point of time in the timeline is evil. And because of that, nearly all the Quarai who live in Dalkor are extraordinarily evil as consequence.
So we're continuing on with the theme of like planes having their own alignment,
kind
energy.
Of, yeah, this definitely falls in line with that. Okay. And with this one, with Dalkor, it seems to flux back and forth.
Got it.
And right now, we've been in a 40,000 years of the Quarai are evil as fuck.
Okay. 40,000 years of pain.
Of evil.
So this kind of brings us to the beginning of the story. So roughly 2,800 years before the current timeline, there survived a rebel faction of good Quarai that dwelt on the plane of Dalkor.
Okay.
And they lived mostly in secret and on the run. Their main enemy was a cabal of evil Quarai dedicated to hunting them down, known as the Dreaming Dark. Being outnumbered, these good Quarai were always on the run, and in their desperation to escape the Dreaming Dark, their leader, Tara Tai, found a way to escape into the waking world. They managed to transform their physical forms in Dalkor into psychic projections that could survive if allowed to possess the bodies of willing humanoids.
Ooh, okay.
In this escape effort, only 67 of the good Quarai managed to escape Dalkor. And they did so by being accepted into the body of a meditating Sarlonan monk. So I guess Sarlon is a place there. I don't know Eberron geography that well, but a Sarlonan monk basically accepted these 67 souls into his body.
Oh, shit.
Actually, no, he only accepted one because he had 66 other volunteers that dwelt at the monastery as well. And these 66 others agreed to house these refugee spirits in themselves.
I could see them all like having like a powwow about it. Like, yeah. I don't know, man. I think we're going to do it.
Oh, I think I'm a little bit.
He's going to do it, then I got to do it. And then there's 66 people that are like, okay, I guess we're doing it.
I guess
we're
doing this.
It's the weirdest Airbnb I've ever heard of in my whole life.
So this is where the first Kalishtar are born, the first 67 of them. Mm-hmm. Now, the fusion of these people's souls was more than just a spiritual fusion that granted these human psionic abilities. This bond also had physiological changes that came with it as well. Mm-hmm. So all Kalishtar look human, but are noted to have unnaturally symmetrical and slightly angular facial features. Like, they're very striking. They're very beautiful, but like in this almost alien kind of way. Their eyes tend to glow with like psionic energy, especially when their emotions are high. Ooh. Their movement is strange and graceful. They're kind of like elves a little bit.
Yeah,
they do live a little bit longer than humans, not like extraordinarily long, maybe like half elf, maybe a little less.
Okay. So is that like, have we talked about like being like, I guess the word's plane touched or whatever, where you kind of inherit some of the like physical, like a Genasi kind of origin.
Yeah.
So this is like, they've been like dream plane touched.
In a way.
So is there a process? Is there a magic? Is there an all spark that is allowing these people to become fucking
Transformers?
Optimus Prime and shit?
Or no, like, nothing like that.
Is it just some reverse soul mitosis going on?
Yeah, you could call it reverse soul mitosis for sure. It's just
your insides begin to reflect on your outside.
Souls are now one. So like thus like their nature, if you will, because you know, nature in D&D is kind of a thing.
Okay.
Is both simultaneously human and Quarai. They're both this psionic creature and they're just mundane creature, all both in one.
Like Piccolo and Nail.
There we go. Yeah, okay. Sure, exactly. Yeah. There we go.
And Kami.
Another thing, because the monastery was a place, like a religious place of worship where like people pilgrim to, it was a place of like many nationalities. And because of this, the Kalishtar don't have like a specific like ethnic look to them. A lot of times they look very racially ambiguous.
Is this like the Ellis Island sort of deal?
I don't know what you mean.
Like lots of people coming in?
I suppose so, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so originally there were 67 Kalishtar because there were only 67 surviving Quarai refugees that needed bodies. Mm. Because their souls were fused, the Quarai were originally very concerned about what would happen when their hosts ended up dying just from natural causes or whatever. But to everyone's surprise, they didn't get to find out what would happen when that happened, because it was discovered that whenever one of the Kalishtar had a child of the same gender as themselves, the child would share the same bond with the original host, Quarai. So as the years passed on and the Kalishtar grew in population, the Quarai found themselves spread thin across generations, bonded to dozens to hundreds of Kalishtar at any given time. No longer do the Quarai souls exist as these individuals. They now live within the communal subconscious of their physical descendants.
Oh, just hive-minding it. Well, actually, that's not right.
It's the opposite, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like they've lost themselves, and there's just, they are like this spiritual entity that is a part of all their descendants.
Okay.
But it's like, interesting. It's like this subconscious thing.
It's like a weird version of like the last thing, the like implosion of the plane and the rebirth is like a reincarnation cycle. So this sounds kind of like reincarnation, like in another kind of aspect, like your soul is going through this metamorphosis and change throughout like generations instead of like you die and then you get like soul transported into like a cow or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment. So though the Quarai have been essentially lost on like the conscious level, their names are remembered, as a Kalishtar uses the name of their Quarai lineage as the suffix to their own name. So for instance, a Kalishtar named Lanharath, his name is Lan, and Harath is the name of the Quarai spirit that he comes from, like his lineage.
Oh, so they're tracking it. You've got...
Yeah, the lineages are very important.
You've got the Karath in
you. There's essentially 66 lineages. I say 66 because the Quarai leader, Taratai, she ends up being... Her entire lineage gets assassinated by the Dreaming Dark. We'll kind of get into that later.
Oh, no!
Yeah, so she's gone, and all the Kalishtar mourn the loss of her lineage because, again, she was the leader of the Quarai.
That's exactly like how when Optimus Prime dies, the rest of the Autobots are like...
You know what? When I started this episode, I did not expect Transformers, like, what's analogs at all.
Okay. Well, you got him.
But I got him. I sure did. So, because this mental bond has grown so thin, Kalishtar can no longer directly communicate with their Quarai as they did originally. Instead, they experience the relationship as a sense of instinct and inspiration. Memories of their Quarai can be shared with them from time to time, usually as a way to share wisdom or moral guidance.
Oh man, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
I'm getting some like major... like Avatar and Legend of Korra vibes, because that's kind of like how the first Avatar came to be, was like this good spirit went inside of him, and that was how he was able to bend all the four different elements.
Oh, really? Wow.
And yeah, I'm just getting super, super vibes because his Korra just went into these people and they're like, now
we've
made you better. Yeah,
exactly. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I didn't know that about
Leaping to generation to generation. I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's intense.
So again, they can have memories shared with them and whatnot. Kalishtar of the same lineage also share a bond with each other because they all share the same the same spirit essentially. Mm. Like they're all sharing part of the same soul. So because of this, most Kalishtar of the same lineage will tend to have similar opinions about things or similar moral values.
Interesting.
They find they can finish each other's sentences and they tend to gravitate towards the same side of any argument.
Well, it's going to make a super cohesive community.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Kalishtar of the same lineage consider each other siblings, regardless of like actual genetic material.
Yeah, we got that soul bond.
We got that soul bond, that indeed.
Soul sister.
It's like your blood type.
So despite the bond a Kalishtar has with the Quarai spirit being a symbiotic relationship with huge boons for the human side, it's actually a very difficult thing to understand or for them to even cope with. So it's not all hunky-dory. It's not like, oh yeah, I got this dope spirit who tells me good things and gives me good powers. It's a difficult thing. So the Quarai is not a separate sentience, but an inherent part of the Kalishtar themselves. Mm-hmm. Impossible to discern where the Quarai ends and the human begins. The personality, memory, and knowledge of the Quarai influenced Kalishtar from a very young age. This brings wisdom and nurturing of a strong moral and ethical compass at an age most children are concerned with, like, playing outside. It's saying, like, you can't recognize a Kalishtar child by looking at them, but within about 5 seconds of talking to them, you can realize, oh, this isn't a human because this is how children speak. Children aren't worried about, like, the moral quandaries of the world.
This dude has otherworldly knowledge.
Exactly.
This 2-year-old.
Look at him, Jennifer. He's sharing voluntarily, and he's happy about it.
And he's happy about it. That is no human.
Can't be.
But again, like, that sounds really nice, but, like, this... this like sheer amount of like, I would say like moral and intellectual responsibility on such a small mind can lead to madness.
Oh no.
Korai are beings from another dimension, beyond the comprehension of mortal beings for the most part. It has memories and thoughts alien to its human host. These memories can trigger emotional reactions within the Kalishtar that don't make sense in the mundane world. Things like anger at the smell of a color or taste of a sound due to some experience the Korai had on its home plane. Like, none of that makes sense to the human mind, but the Korai spirit's going through it, and thus the Kalishtar is having an emotional reaction and doesn't understand what's going on.
Oh man, one of the lineages is like, fucking no scrambled eggs in my house. We barfed one time in ancient times, and we will not eat that.
I hate that shit forever.
No more scrambled. You don't bring eggs in my house, I'm gonna look at you crooked. All of them, the whole line.
So, if a mental balance between the two mentalities is not maintained, the result can be a highly unstable individual. For this reason, Kalishtar are taught to hone their minds and embrace stoicism. And with that, let's take a short rest.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the part of the episode. We're not talking about that last thing. We are not talking about it. I see your... Will, you keep doing this to me, man. Don't talk about that. Okay. We're talking about something else. All Jake, right. Do you know what we're going to talk about? You don't.
I just got here. No.
We're going to talk about people that support us on Patreon.
Ooh, hell
Thank
yeah.
you for coming and becoming a supporter of the show monetarily or upping your pledge. We're going to shout you out. We're
going to
shout you out
name.
Again, baby. That's dude. We're going to. That's right. We're going to say your damn name. But before we do that, I want to tell the audience about how much I love them, because I do.
Bring it low.
Well, I'm gonna need you to. I'm gonna need you to tell them also.
I also love you guys. Thank you so much,
Jake.
I love them so much. Yes, thank you for all the support.
It's just like a feeling.
It is. You know? It's a warm feeling.
Like it's just like an AOE kind of like we're here doing the show. It's just love all over.
Just 3d6 love damage all over us.
Oh man,
it's getting weird.
It's been getting weird. Thank you, Cage Kersey.
Thanks, Cage Kersey.
Thank you, Blind Man.
Thank you, Random Blind Man.
No, it's just Blind Man.
Okay, thank you, Blind Man.
Thank you, Valentine.
Thanks, Valentine.
Thank you, Colin Courtright.
Thanks, Colin.
The return of Warboner. Thank you, Warboner.
Thanks for returning, Warboner. Warbonesies.
Thank you, Linus Hag.
Thanks, Linus.
Or Hag. What does it mean with the two dots?
I don't know.
I feel like it's Hag. I feel like it needs to have like an accent to it. Yeah.
Like A wants it to say A. Yeah. Obsidian Dragoon.
Ooh, thanks, Obsidian Dragoon.
Thanks.
That's a dope name.
Your character's coming, Obsidian Dragoon.
Yeah. Hey. On Super Quest Saga, a sci-fi D&D 5th edition adventure dungeon mastered by Will Stark himself. William. With players such as Brian McDonald playing Carter Huttenberg, Jacob Cazada playing Persephone Goldbettel, and Josh Freeland playing Sebastian Crenshaw.
He's not here.
Will, how do you feel about our show, Super Quest Saga?
I mean, I'm really enjoying it, and so and the audience seems to be really enjoying it.
I'm having a blast playing in every game, and I love like doing the post-production for it and getting to listen back to it and premiering it on Tuesday nights and with our community that we've gathered who seem to be responding quite well. I love the show. It is fantastic. I know I like help produce the show. I'm a character in it. But it's a legit, like, it's a special brand of D&D, but it's a lot of fun. What a, like, a roller coaster of emotions at every sit down. Some sick, excellent laughs and goofs. Yes. We've been doing lots of good things. We want you to help spread the word.
Indeed. So we're running a contest.
Hey, yeah. The way we do.
The way we do.
Do you want some dice or something?
Well, not this time. This time it's a book. So the newest book coming out for D&D, Descent into Avernus, which is going to be covering a lot of like Nine Hells lore, angel, devil, blood.
We know how
stuff.
Much y'all love Nine Hells.
Oh, yeah, yes. We all do. So yeah, we're going to give away a copy of that. And the way that you enter the contest, to win it is by sharing Super Quest Saga on social media and sending us proof. Now this can be on Twitter. You can just share it on Twitter with the hashtag, SuperQuest. You can share it on Facebook. Just take a snapshot and send it to either our Twitter or our email, thedungeoncast@gmail.com. Mm. Or you can share Super Quest Saga on Instagram. I'll let Brian say how you do that.
Yeah. I'm going to make a post that will be up at, are we starting the contest like right when this episode drops?
I think so, or right after July 1st. So this contest will be running from July 1st to September 1st. We're going to announce the winner on September 1st.
On July 1st, I will post on Instagram. It'll be a lot like the last contest we ran, but it'll be Super Quest Saga themed and it will have rules in the description. But basically what it's going to entail is that you're going to need to leave a comment on that post tagging two people. And you're going to have to also tell them to check out Super Quest Saga, and there will be a link in the bio to our SoundCloud page where we host Super Quest Saga. But you can get it on any podcast listening app of your choice. Where do you get your podcasts? Go there and find Super Quest Saga. You can find it on YouTube also. Mm-hmm, you know, that would be...
These are where most people are finding it right now.
Yeah, yeah. iTunes, Podcast Addict, Podbean, CastBox, iTunes, YouTube,
Spotify.
We're on Spotify. Yeah. Hell yeah! Go to any of those spots. Google Play Music, Google Podcasts. What the hell is it called?
Yeah, we are on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're on all that shit. Get on there and give us some love if you want. And if you want to be a character in, if you want to be named after an NPC in Will's campaign, you can go to our Patreon at thedungeoncastpatreon.com, and you can look at the tier that has that available. It's the $50 tier. That's what we're offering. You get all the other benefits. You get early episodes. You get a live game, Flashbang and the Surgeon, which is based off of Batman, the animated series. You get Jake is a player in that. You get a sick merch at the $20 tier.
You do.
And then you get the name. Mm, delicious. Mm. And you're supporting the show. You're helping keep the lights on, paying our hosting fees. And we're trying to buy new cameras for the show.
Indeed we are.
So that's like a great thing. So you can be associated with us in lots of ways. Those are all the ways. Maybe we should get back to the show.
Let's get back to the show.
Let's go.
We've returned. Jake, did you have a good night's sleep last night?
It was quite restful.
Tell me of your dreams.
I dreamed of, what are these things called?
The Gorai.
Gorai. I dreamt it came to me and was like, Let me unto your soul.
You told me right before this that you didn't know what this was.
This is true. You did say that.
Well, that was before.
Will, did you have any dreams last night?
No, I slept soundly.
Okay.
Good. Soundly, restfully, and I did not go to Delcar. But let's get back into it.
Jake, you were telling me that this
reminded you of something.
I didn't dream.
I don't know if anybody out there has played Dragon Age Inquisition.
They have.
I'm sure they have. It kind of reminds me of like how
it's a very popular game.
The mages in that story. Go to the Fade.
Oh yeah,
and they dream of the Fade, and the Fade is kind of like the Shadow Realm a little bit. That's where demons and bad shit come from, and everything like that. But that's where they go to dream, and they can like explore the Fade and explore like old battles and shit like that. And just kind of what this is. This is also giving me some of those feels.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I like that.
There's a bunch of people that are prisoners there because they lost card games.
Probably there's a lot of fucked up shit in there.
So back on the note of. Being a Kalashtar being a difficult thing.
Yes.
To further exacerbate the already difficult situation is the fact that whether the Kalashtar choose or not, all Kalashtar have inherited this war of the Rebel Korai versus the Dreaming Dark.
Because they're still coming in and taking out.
Yeah, because
Optimus.
They still exist and they're still evil and they're still pissed.
Decepticons are still rolling up.
That's the tagline, still pissed.
So when the original Korai escaped Alcor, the Dreaming Dark railed in anger and swore vengeance upon the Kalashtar for basically being their escape. It took 300 years in mortal time, 3,000 years in Dalkor time, because I guess time moves 10 times faster in Dalkor for some whatever reason. So, but eventually, the Dreaming Dark also found a way to cross to the Prime Material Plane. By traveling on the fringes of the various dreamscapes, they managed to find a way to whisper and incept ideas and suggestions into the minds of mortals.
Oh, crazy.
So after centuries of manipulation, they managed to actually throw entire nations into chaos.
Oh, no.
During this chaos, they also orchestrated the creation of a new humanoid race called the Inspired to serve as vessels for the evil Korai to enter the world and control. The Inspired are essentially a breed of super people through the fusion of elven, human, and demonic bloodlines. They're super strong, super psychic, super beautiful, and completely unable to resist a Korai possession. That's kind of like the Kalashtar are willing vessels. The Inspired are genetically bred vessels that have no willpower to resist a Korai that chooses to possess them.
They're like Mandalorian clones.
Oh, wow.
You just like breed him. Breed him to reverse mitosis.
to get the job done.
Through the possession of the Inspired and the manipulation of an entire population's dreams, the Dreaming Dark has managed to establish a nation that they rule from the shadows called Redra. It's a nation very much dedicated to Kalashtar elimination.
Okay.
So they got a whole country that hates them.
There's only like 60 plus of these dudes.
Well, not anymore.
Like, they're doing the most.
Not anymore. There's whole generations of them. So fortunately for the Kalashtar, they mostly dwell in a monastic communities high in the mountains of Adar, unable to be besieged by the Redran armies. Unfortunately, though, the Dreaming Dark never sleeps and spends its time sowing paranoia and bigotry amongst non-Kalashtar versus the Kalashtar. They encourage criminals to prey on Kalashtar in their communities, and they send hunters and assassins after the Kalashtar that leave their enclaves.
The stuff of nightmares.
Man, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's
pretty
messed up.
I did what you did there.
So there are two ways that the Kalashtar fight back against their enemy, the Path of Light and the Path of Shadow. Now, these are not mutually exclusive, and they're not opposing ideologies despite their names. So, like, you choose one or the other.
Is it like a yin and yang where, like, it's supposed to work cohesively?
I don't really know. I don't know much about yin and yang or how that works, but they do work cohesively, and some Kalashtar practice both, and most just practice the Path of Light, though.
Is it like how Usador is the Master of Light and Shadow?
Yes.
Okay.
It's exactly like that.
Got it.
That's fucking hilarious. So the Path of Light is the primary ideology of the Kalashtar, and the original one that was held by the Rebel Korai. So remember how I said Dalkor is theoretically on this cycle of self-destruction and rebirth that is currently in an age of darkness?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, those who follow the Path of Light believe that the only way to turn the cycle over to the next age is through spiritual change. So essentially, it's all about promoting goodness and positivity, both within themselves and through throughout like the world, like through meditation and prayer and like perfecting oneself and by doing good works and spreading the ideology to other people. Mm-hmm. So the idea being that like once a threshold of positive energy is met, the transformation of Delcor will occur.
It's like, make sure you double check the bag before you give people their order to make sure it's right, like at the drive-thru.
Yeah, I guess stuff like
that's
that.
That's goodwill.
I mean,
that's
yes, going to change it they, quick. They do do all the little things. They try and like do the little things, but they also try and do the big things as well.
Sweet.
So this, again, is another big reason why the Dreaming Dark is so dead set on wiping out the Kalish Dark, because they don't want Delcor to change. They like being evil and they like being powerful and all these other things.
I was going to ask you what their motivation is, because it was sort of vague. They just don't like it. Or, like, no they, happy bad.
So, the idea here was, like, when Delcor turned over, there was just a certain amount of Korai that felt out of sync with reality. And they didn't agree with, like, the way their society was going and whatnot.
Sure,
and
sure.
They just, they
because these other Dark Fools were like, this is the best.
Yeah.
Let's like, go commit crime.
While the population was reveling and being immoral and doing evil things and domineering, these Korai felt like this was not the right way, and they felt like they didn't belong, and they wanted to change things back to the way that they think things should be.
They're living in the 24-hour purge, and they're trying to get out.
Exactly. Yeah, they're living in the 24-hour purge, and they're trying to get out, and they got out. Unfortunately, the purge followed them.
Yes. The purge is like, no one escapes the purge. Exactly. It's like a gang. Like, you can't really get out of a gang so easy.
I suppose so. So that's the path of light. The path of shadows, on the other hand, is much more about kicking ass and taking names. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially a secret martial art of the Kalish Dar. It's a deadly dance paired with the ideology of using their prowess to protect their people and to fight back against evils of the world. Mm-hmm. Specifically, Korai evil, mostly. You know, mostly the Korai evil, but also other evil. Like, there's this really dope image in, I think it was Races of Eberron for 3.5, and it's mm-hmm. like these two Kalish Dar monks, and they're fighting like this evil, like, necromancer cleric, and it just looks really cool. I was like, that's a cool image.
We'll fight that too when it's convenient. Yeah. When we're dungeon diving and we run into this mother.
Indeed. So for the most part, Kalish Dar live in monastic societies full of monks, priests, artisans, and teachers. They live austere, stoic lives dedicated to perfecting themselves and making the world a better place. Mm. When it comes to their relations with other races of Eberron, outside of the influence of the Dreaming Dark trying to pit people against the Kalish Dar, the Kalish Dar tend to actually get along with almost everybody. Their skill as artisan works to make them great traders. Like, people love to trade with them because they make great work. They tend to leave great impressions with those they meet due to their innate wisdom and their very peaceful, good nature.
Did you happen to find any more details on, like, what kind of good work they do? Are they making, like, weapons or jewels or both? Or, like, because people toss that out, like, the elves make dope shit. The dwarves make dope shit.
Yeah.
Some humans make dope shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
so when I say good works, I mean, like, they're going out and doing good things, is what I mean.
Good deeds.
Good deeds, yeah. Okay, I thought you meant, like, the merchant stuff.
No, I'm
speaking
from, like, the Judeo-Christian idea of good works.
Oh.
Like, yeah. But they also do make good works, too.
Yeah, okay.
That is the thing they also do.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was asking about specifically.
But what I mean is, they go out, they give to the poor, they help the needy, they protect the innocent, they go out and they be good people and try to make the world a better place.
Sure.
But they also make really good baskets.
Okay, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, but is it because they're trying so hard, or are they?
Yeah,
like,
they everything they do, they try and do their absolute best all the time. This is another thing this is why it's difficult to be a Kalish Dar, because, like, the human spirit might rail against this, and this can create, like, a what's it called?
Like a psychological friction,
like a psychological friction.
Like a schism.
There's a word for it. It starts with a D, and I can't think of what it is, but. Anyways, yeah, it causes that, and it can lead to madness. It could just lead to them just being unstable in general. And of course, if the human tries to go down a path of evil, the Korai spirit's not going to like it, and it's going to, like, rail against the human, and it's just a mess.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like a tug of war.
It's a tug of war. Now, the human has a stronger hold on that rope than the Korai does. Because
right. My body.
My body, and because, like, the Korai spread across a bunch of people. But, like, even then, like, a human that, like, decides to go, like, an evil route will constantly have this voice of conscience, like, telling them that they're doing wrong. So they'll constantly feel this guilt. So, like...
Like, trying to pick a lock, and the spirit's like, no!
Don't do it!
No, stop!
Right, right.
You have my name attached to you. Don't do this!
Can't do this! And they're like, shut up!
Yeah, so it's like everything you do, you basically have a voice in your ear telling you that you're wrong and should stop, and, I mean, that would be aggravating.
Oh, yeah, especially if it's sounded like the thing I did.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. But yeah, so they also, the Kalishtar have a great degree of empathy of others, again, because they care. So generally, most people like them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Any questions about the Kalishtar before we get into the racial stats and like their abilities and stuff?
They seem super dope.
They're really cool.
Was it dichotomy that you were trying to remember?
Yes, that's exactly it.
I was like, I know this word.
Thank you. Thank you, Jake.
You're a really special guest.
I got you.
So, yeah, any questions? Was there any questions?
They don't turn into robots?
No, not at all. I'm sorry.
But they are in disguise.
They have the Warforged for that. By the way, they are personally very fascinated by the Warforged, and I think this is the Quarry being like,
what if a Quarry went into a Warforged? Yeah. Would it then transform into a Quarry?
Yes, sure.
Why human?
Like, yeah.
Well, a human is just what they landed upon. And yeah, honestly, they were lucky they landed on a really dope monk that was like, sure.
Yeah, it's like, sure, me and my bros would love to rent out our bodies to you.
Exactly. They got really fucking lucky.
It's really dumb monk who like experimented with a lot of psychedelics.
Indeed.
Yeah, he was like, I'm into new things.
But the reason they're so fascinated with the Warforged is because they're pretty sure that House Knath, which is the creators of the Warforged, don't have or shouldn't have the magical or technological capability for soul creation.
And yet, right.
The Warforged, without a doubt, seem to have souls. Mm-hmm. Where do these souls come from? And so the Quarai, being creatures of the soul, are just very fascinated by the whole concept.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't know you could do that either.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Well, damn.
So, yeah, let's get into their stats. So Kalishtar get a +1 to wisdom and +1 to charisma and an additional +1 to an ability score of your choice.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So they got
that human element there.
That human element there. I really like that. You know, they're just basic medium humanoids. Their alignment tends to be towards the lawful good because of the inherent nature of the Quarai. Speed is 30 feet. They have a feature called dual mind. When you make a wisdom saving throw, you can use your reaction to gain advantage on the roll. You can use this trait immediately before or after you roll, but before any of the roll's effects occur. So, ooh, like a nice little advantage.
That's pretty dope. Any reaction?
When you make a wisdom saving throw, you can use your reaction to gain advantage. So when you're making wisdom save, you can be extra wise about it.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Which wisdom saves come up quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a good one. Illusion magic and whatnot.
Indeed.
It's very true.
And it makes sense, again, them being these psionic people. The next feature they get is called mental discipline. They have natural resistance to psychic damage.
Ooh, so neat.
There we go. Protect the
minds.
That's
kind of backward. Like, you know, you're used to the barbarian. And like nothing being like super strong against psychic stuff.
Except that's
like
for the barbarian. Right?
Yeah, no. That's like the one, like, no, the barbarian is taking.
Oh, that's the one thing that they're not resistant to.
Most classes, like, there's not really a lot of psychic resistance out there.
No, there really isn't. Yeah. I think the Warlock Pact might get one of the Warlock Pacts.
Yeah, there is a Pact of the Tome, mine. You eventually get, like, buffs against psychic stuff.
Okay, yeah, for sure. The next feature they get is called Mind Link. You can speak telepathically to any creature you can see within 60 feet of you. You don't need to share a language with the creature for it to understand your telepathic messages.
That's awesome.
But the creature must be able to understand at least one language or be telepathic itself. As a bonus action, when you're speaking telepathically to a creature, you can give that creature the ability to speak telepathically to you until the start of your next turn. To use this ability, the creature must be within 60 feet of you and be able to see you. So
that
telepathic speak.
That gives you a lot of insight into the setting. Like telepathic communication is its own form of language.
Mm-hmm. I guess so, yeah.
And it's universal is what it sounds like. Like there is a universal, like your ability to exchange ideas on this like upper level.
Right. And that makes sense because like, you know, the words we use are just interpretations of the ideas we're having. If you're able to just straight link minds, then language becomes, you know, unimportant.
Welcome to our episode of Fantasy Philosophy.
Fantasy Philosophy. Oh, no. Yeah. We started a new series. God damn it.
It's a new fire. Let it burn within you.
So the next feature is called Psychic Glamour. Choose one of the following skills. You know how I feel about these. Insight, Intimidation, Performance, or Persuasion. You have an advantage on all ability checks you make with that skill. So I guess this is fine. I really don't like the feature. It's like, yeah, choose one of these seven. Yeah, you get that. Cool. It's like, it just feels lazy to me. But
like
whatever.
Bonato art.
Yeah.
Like no one's playing Shulk.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. Anyways.
It's true.
The final feature they get is called Severed from Dreams. Kalishtar sleep, but they don't connect to the plane of dreams as other creatures do. Instead, their minds draw from the memories of otherworldly spirits of their otherworldly spirit while they sleep.
So they just like reminisce about their old life.
Yeah, indeed. They're like, it used to be so nice going to the dream place.
As such, you are immune. Actually, I would imagine that these dreams are probably very unpleasant for the most part.
Yeah.
I would imagine most of their memories are really, really bad.
Yeah. It's like
getting hunted.
That
and
one
shit.
Lineage is like, did you have the dream about the scrambled eggs yet?
Yeah. They're like, oh shit, I did.
Like, that's your like coming of age. I know, like when you're 9 or 10, you have that dream, you can't eat eggs anymore. Just like, damn.
Can't see the color green no more, and that was your favorite color. And there's green like fucking that's everywhere. Really cool. You're like, no.
I smelled the green in my sleep. I don't know what it means. My waking mind can't hang.
Fuck that grass.
I can't hang.
So as such, you are immune to magical spells and effects that require you to dream, like the dream spell. Ooh. But not spells and effects that put you to sleep, like the sleep spell.
Okay.
So it's less effective.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then finally, languages. You can speak Common, and you can speak Quarai, and one other language of your choice. Now, this stat is cool. It's very good. But for me, I wish they would have added like one other like psychic power besides the telepathy, because like a lot of Kalashar do gain a low level of telekinesis.
Okay.
Where they can move things with their mind.
Spoon bending.
And they're not really being a psionic class yet, like besides the Unearthed Arcana one. Like it would be nice if they just got a little bit, like maybe a free mage hand.
But,
flavored psionically, so it's just telekinetic. Like, I would probably just homebrew that in, but that's just because me, and that's how I feel Kalashtar should be. But other than that, I have no complaints really about it at all.
Okay.
Seems dope.
So, like, you get a cantrip, basically, is what you're...
Yeah, and I think that's fair. It's just, we don't have a Scion class, and we should by now, and especially since the Kalashtar, you know, they tend to go that way. They tend to be either monks or Scions, so...
Okay.
Oh, with that being said, I think we can get ready for a long rest, unless you guys got any questions.
Do you have any questions about the Kalashtar?
I don't think so. I think I'm ready to go to the dream place.
Okay. I have one question their locale. Like, do they hold up? Like,
in monastic communities up in the mountains of Adar. So, basically, they're like these monastery fortresses, because they have to defend themselves against the Dreaming Dark that try and show up and kill them.
So they didn't just inherit the, like, that monk culture... like is being passed down also.
It is. Yeah. Cool, it's cool, blending as cool. one. And like, I think the idea here is that Taratai, when she reached out into the waking world to try and find escape, it wasn't like she just, they all left and then they were just like, fuck, what do we do? And they happened to cross the monk. I think she was reaching out to people and she found the monk and she was probably speaking with this monk over the course of maybe months or years and like explaining their situation and then like what's bridging the gap.
And then coming getting into a place where they could empathize.
Yeah. And then like the two cultures became as one.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
And okay. Well, before we go today, I want to tell everyone about our gaming channel, TDC Plays, which
Fun
is
times.
You can find on YouTube. And if you like us here at the Dungeon Cast, if you like our voices, if you like our personalities, well, you can go enjoy them also there, just playing video games rather than talking about D&D. We do Smash Sundays where we play Smash Brothers Ultimate. Right now we're in the middle of a Legend of Zelda Wind Waker playthrough. We just finished Undertale. We just finished Sonic Mania. Brian's doing Mega Man X. We got a lot going on.
Hollow Knight's on its way.
Yeah, Hollow Knight's on. Oh, I'm excited.
Hollow Knight
for that
by
one.
Brian.
That's going to be super
That'll
dope.
That'll be dope.
So, yeah, we got a lot going on. A lot of cool games and us enjoying them. And if anyone's interested in that, check out the link in the description.
You can catch my boy Jake. Check out the newest Smash Sunday. If Steve makes it, it's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to pop like crazy.
It's going to get wild.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
With that being said, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
1, 2, 3, 4, to save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.